In-car connectivity is becoming a giant battlefield in the auto industry. With us to talk about it is an expert on that. Srini Chakravarti is Vice President of Tata Consultancy Services, looking at this from a global point of view. Let's talk about car connectivity and what it means to the individual buyer and to the car companies. Here's that interview right now. So let's talk about this whole issue. Let's talk about car connectivity, and certainly it's become a very, very hot topic. A lot of people are battling for the for the rights to kind of control car connectivity for the consumer. Talk a bit about that. How big it is? How big it's going to get?
Yeah, great. Obviously, it's the talk of the town, and we definitely also try to go a little below the surface in terms of trying to understand what connectivity means, and therefore your question about how big is it and how big it's going to get, right? I think it's best if we slice it into two parts, right? The connectivity itself, which is more of the provisioning of infrastructure connectivity for the car, and then the services that are laid up on top of that. In terms of connectivity or the ability for the car to connect with the ecosystem and the capabilities that are now loaded onto the car, I guess pretty much everybody by default is looking at providing those. The only difference as we see is there are two strategies that are coming up. One is to design those platforms of connectivity completely by yourself. The second is to take market platforms from any of the potential vendors and then trying to assimilate that into the ecosystem. But that element of connectivity is kind of being driven. Again, say that it's a little distance away, but in probably 2 to 3 years, it would become default. We may have to segment this into mass market developing countries versus premium markets, developed countries, and so on and so forth, because the investment surplus that's available for the OEM to make that 100% connectivity would vary based on the segment that's being targeted. So that's on the that's big. That's big in the sense that it means a huge amount of money being spent towards the hubs inside the car, the telematics that goes along with it, the software that needs to be loaded. Then, of course, the entire control systems to manage the latest status and patch updates and software over the air and all, right? So it brings a huge loaded ecosystem along with it.
Right.
It's on the app side when you look at it. And here's where we felt that there is a little bit of difference in terms of when you say how big is it. Because one side is the OEM's own drivers, which is the OEM connecting to the car to ensure that, A, what is the health of the vehicle, understand the vehicle driver behavior, and so on and so forth. And then there are some big chunks of third-party applications like insurance where, trying to figure out the pay-per-use models or even just understanding driver behavior and fixing the right kind of premiums. But then there are a host of other applications which are truly, truly third-party, let's say parking, connecting with the marketplace or promotions being offered and so on and so forth. Now, that's pulling those applications together is not a big deal. Connecting it into the car, it depends on how the OEM perceives that journey and integrates you into the ecosystem. But how much revenue is spinning out of them remains a little bit of a question mark. Primarily because A, it's early days. B is a lot of people feel that, well, it's something that they have a right when they're paying such a premium for the car itself. And obviously the third is that what is it that it offers that is very different from what your mobile phone offers today. So I think that side of that journey is a little more complex as compared to the other side.
Obviously, there are a lot of big players who are looking to get into the car or have gotten into but want to dominate the car connectivity game. And they're probably different players in different countries, but they're also global players. Who are some of the big ones and what are their chances, do you think? Handicap some of the big players, if you would.
Yeah, I think, see, what the, I've also trying to be doing some surveys in terms of meeting some car companies and meeting some car dealerships and trying to pose as a customer, trying to buy a couple of cars both in India as well as abroad, trying to understand what the sales psyche is and what the buyer psyche is, right? And what we see here is, the OEM-developed app fronts are competing with, as you are calling it, the global competition. Obviously, the Android and the Apple CarPlay are very dominant teams. And the dilemma that we came across truly was who owns or who will ultimately own the customer experience, right? So for some, and here again the segmentation becomes very critical. For some, where the cost of building all of this on top of, let's say, an X dollar car is too much of a premium and they lose their competitive advantage because of the pricing impact. But for others, where the elasticity of demand is not so much price sensitive, can afford to have their own complete layer on top of the everything. So there is a very, very clear pattern that is emerging that the high-end branded premium positioned vehicles would like to have their own footprint and imprint into the car, saying, I control the experience that I deliver to my customers, versus the general car mass market vehicles where it's not that important. It's important to give some experience, and therefore they would prefer to go for all these leading platforms that are readily available. Where will be the settling in point between them is something that we need to watch, because the desire to own the experience is one part of it, but it is also the revenue model that sits behind it. Ultimately, you're doing it all for making money, and of course differentiation is there. So if you lose your gateway to money, then you're going to potentially have a problem.
Well, it seems like consumer demand or consumer desires have got to be a big part of this. And it seemed to me that, two or three years ago, a lot of the OEMs, the car manufacturers, were pretty adamant about, that the car driver was their customer, and they were kind of loath to let others into the game. And at the same time, though, the consumer was demanding that they had, smartphone, either Apple or Android functionality in their cars. And so I think a lot of OEMs have kind of abdicated and just turned that experience in a lot of ways over to Apple and Google and Alphabet. Do you look at it that way?
That's actually correct, in the sense that many of them are running dual systems, in the sense they would have their platform, but they also provision for mirroring, where you can mirror pretty much any mobile set onto your car, or there is obviously the CarPlay as well as the Android car available there. So there is every OEM wants to provide everything, and therefore you're right in the sense that they have in some ways ceded some territory to the external entrant in order to please the end customer. In my discussion with the fairly senior members, leadership members of many car OEMs, it is a cause for concern for them, and they are definitely stacking up the ammunition to see how they can compete in this space. So I don't think the final word has been written on this. We do expect some interesting play out over the next couple of years before the verdict will be out.
It seems as if a lot of people have less loyalty to their car brand than they do to their smartphone brand. What's your take on that and how that impacts this whole game?
Yeah, so I think you obviously seem to be very close to close ear to the market. So we've been hearing, I've also experienced a similar voice both from customers as well as from the OEMs. In the sense, when you look at the buying behavior, how passionate you are about the brand versus how passionate you are about the mobile. See, it's all about the individual aspirational positioning, what gives you more positioning, and the demographic segment. So I'm sorry, but I keep coming back to the segmentation story. But what happens is when you segment people by their demographics, by age, by occupation, and when you look at the younger crowd versus the older crowd. With the younger crowd, very passionate about their gadgets and electronics. The older crowd still passionate about the art and the signs of the car, right? So when you divide this segment, you will find some very interesting behaviors. Those who own these gadgets would say, well, this is my aspirational brand, and I would like to see everything in through this lens. And therefore, for them, the purchasing criteria are different. You go the other way, it's a little different. And given the fact that the population was shifting more towards the younger age group now, and so also the buying behavior, therefore your judgment there is reasonably accurate, in the sense there would be a greater pull towards the new aspiration brand of these modern gadget-driven companies.
Well, and there's also the issue of functionality and just, understanding how the things work, which I guess is the definition of functionality, isn't it? I think consumers are less inclined to want to learn several new technologies or a different technology when, the technology that they're carrying around in their pocket, they believe they understand and are comfortable using. How does that fit into the whole scheme?
Exactly. In fact, very recently I was writing a small piece myself and articulated this in simple terms as, if you look at basically a mobile phone, ultimately it becomes a platform, and it allows different partners to land onto that platform and provide you services, which we experience as apps. And obviously iTunes is pretty much the best example, and the same way on the other side. Now, the car is actually very quietly becoming a digital experience platform in itself, in the sense that there is a skin, which is the hardware of the car. But once you land inside the car, and you've installed all these systems, the hardware part of it, the software actually becomes an experience platform. And why I say an experience platform is, apart from just being app providers, there are some interesting things that you can do there. Apart from, all this whole insurance story, it is all about connecting to your home, personalizing it to make it behave exactly the way you want it to behave, and doing many other stuff, which, as you said, some of the things that you can do on your mobile, you can do on the car app, and vice versa. So that experience is also becoming, with a new form factor, is also becoming an exciting opportunity for the connected ecosystem to exploit. So the car as a digital experience platform could be an interesting dimension in which the mobile phone will compete. And this equation, if you were to ask me, would change more in favor of the car once the autonomous features start coming in. Right now, you're pretty much on the low end of the autonomy curve. But as the higher-end features start coming in, the importance of the connectivity of the car, the value of the connectivity of the car, would start shifting a little away from the mobile phone. That's one part of it, Jack. But the other thing that I would like to say is, what does the mobile phone not offer you which the car could, right? And that's where the OEM and the car equation becomes very critical. The vehicle health, the vehicle maintenance, the vehicle performance, the vehicle tuning, and everything that you want to know which is relevant to you becomes very, very critical. And that's the soft spot or the sweet spot where the OEM and the related ecosystem can exploit and is exploiting in order to build the bonding between the owner or the driver and the OEM. So I think that's a little different from experiencing the general aspects of just connecting to the world outside, which you could do through the mobile phone. So I think there's a little bit of difference between the two there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I'm glad you brought up autonomous drive. But let's talk first about, you know, essentially car self-diagnosis and helping the manufacturer understand what's going on with an individual's vehicle. It strikes me that in some ways the manufacturer is more concerned about that than the driver is. As long as the car is operating, properly, at least in the driver's mind, I don't think they care that much about how far they are from a required oil change or something like that. But maybe the manufacturer does, and the manufacturer certainly wants to understand what the consumer is doing with that car and also give the consumer prompts to get proper service. Talk about service a little bit, would you, and how that figures into all this.
Yeah, so here is where I think it is the struggle for supremacy in terms of differentiation, right? So when all things becoming equal, which means that you have, let's say, cars in the same segment category, the look, the styling may be a little different, but pretty much give or take, all of them have similar specs, similar features, and all. So what is the only element of differentiation left with you? It is these kinds of capabilities. So you're right in the sense that if the car company seems to be more bothered about your usage of the car and the potential implication in terms of the service parameters, the answer is yes, because they just want to delight you with that extra more insight and knowledge that they seem to carry, which otherwise you would be blindsided towards. So, and that's why, one of the elements that is coming in. But I would also say that if you just look at the broader picture of experience, the number of recalls or glitches in the cars has also gone up significantly in recent times, and it is bound to go up as more and more software gets into the car and all these features, hundreds of these features get launched, which means that this becomes a very vital element for you to really understand if everything from a health perspective of the car and the owner is in great shape. And that's where the differentiation would come in, because can you do some remote healing or self-healing and other elements to make sure that your car is foolproof will become a very, very important feature. So that's one of the reasons why they are going after a full 100% understanding of the vehicle. There's a second dimension to it, because everybody here understands now that the days of fractional ownership are not too far away. And therefore, between, let's say, you, me, or Steve here, you may end up using the same car with different driving patterns. So how do you, as an OEM, really understand what's going on in the car when you know that it's not a single ownership is important. So they're all trying to perfect that element to get ready for that inevitable fractional ownership situation. So that's the other reason why you see that overt concern about the vehicle behavior.
Right. We're running short of time, but I do want to ask you about privacy concerns. I think privacy is something that a lot of people are paying more and more attention to. Certainly, in various areas of the globe, they pay more or less attention to it. But talk about privacy as it impacts connectivity and vice versa.
Yeah, I think this is very much an in thing in terms of what we came across was pretty much a trade-off between the price you pay versus the price of privacy. Okay, in the sense that when services were free, or in the so-called first phase where you not allow need to pay for any of the features. People do, I believe, as most OEMs told me, people are hooked on and they love the features. But the moment you have to pay for it, then the price of privacy comes in, saying, why do I need to share this data? Why my data? Why my location? And so many other parameters. So therefore, again, the equation shifts back to, why not just mirror what I'm already doing on the mobile phone and then be happy with it? So that's true, absolutely right. And there is a trade-off there, and privacy concerns are fairly dominant when it comes to decisions of what will I seek from the OEM and the car, and what I will not. And that's what our observation is. And therefore, one of the reasons why many of the features that the OEMs are providing into the cars potentially may not end up being used, because people will turn off at a certain point of time.
Terrific. Is there anything else that you think either business people and or consumers should know about in-car connectivity going forward?
I guess, see, from the technology dimension, it's pretty much well understood. I think the key factor, which from is the business dimension to it, in the sense that how will the a uniform or a well-established revenue framework, revenue sharing model, because if the car truly becomes an experience platform and there are different, and it's like a marketplace where people are landing and taking off, providing different kind of services, what's the right price point? What is the equation? Who shares the data? Who gets what for that particular data point? I think those equations are yet to stabilize and become commercially viable. But that's going to be potentially the most important action point where every service industry is now going to converge around the car and fight for their share of that revenue with the OEM. What is that mathematical equation that's going to make things work is something that we believe is going to be the focus of attention for the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for speaking with us. We do appreciate it. It sounds like there are more questions than there are answers, but I think that's good for you at Tata Consultancy Services. Thanks so much for speaking to us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that was Srini Chakravati of Tata Consulting Services talking about the battle for the dashboard that's going on right now. Join us again for more of America on the Road right here on Driving Today.